And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
And a good morning to you. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here in Highland Radio. 9:05 this Friday, the 26th of July. I hope you're all very well indeed. And you're welcome aboard for the next 3 hours. It's the usual interesting mix. I hope you'd agree for a Friday. We kick off with our Friday panel, and it's sort of like a blend of in-person and remote. John McNulty is the Donegal County Ladies Manager and a business person. Good morning, John. Thanks very much for calling in.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you with us. And we have Kieran Mullooly, MEP for Midlands Northwest. Good morning, Kieran.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to your listeners.
Good to have you with us. And Emma McGrath, a teacher and co-director of McGrath School of Speech and Drama. Good morning to you, Emma. How are you getting on?
Good. Good morning, everybody. How are you?
It's great to have you all with us, and looking forward to what you have to say. Right. Okay. Let's kick off with the government, and it's agreed a close on €750 million funding programme for RTE over the next 3 years. Under the plan, RTE will get £225 million in funding next year from TV licence fee revenue. That's topped up then by taxpayers' money. The decision was approved by Cabinet on Wednesday after months of wrangling between ministers about how the broadcaster should be funded. This will then rise to £240 million in 2026, £260 million in 2027. And TV licence sales receipts, of course, have been declining for years and amounted to £123 million in 2023. Rival independent network Virgin Media said it was extremely disappointed over a lack of recognition of others providing public service broadcasting, which I presume includes us as well. Some would see the outcome from all the controversy at RTE over the last year as actually RTE getting its own way in terms of funding. It wanted the funding model to remain the same, but topped up by the Exchequer. And here we are. What do you think of this, John McNulty? I'll start with you. You pleased with it? Do you think it's money well spent?
Well, Greg, I probably have two trains of thought on it. First of all, what happened with RTE this last while, you would be very annoyed with things that happened in the station and the way things were carried on and the waste of money that was used in it. And really down that line would be very frustrating for me or a lot of people that we say pay the TV licence and look forward to, we say, what you do with what the programmes are on the TV. But in saying all that, you just look and say that when it's all said and done, you have to look and say, well, do we want a state broadcasting station, and do we need those stations?
Well, what is a state broadcasting station in your view? Because you have to really determine what that is before you can judge if we want one or not.
Yeah, I agree. And I think for me anyway, and from my day of when I'm growing up and looking at it, it's always been the shows that you would have looked at. See, you take your All-Ireland series, you take your All-Ireland football final, your hurling final last week, where it probably had a huge attention.
Much of that's on GAA Go now.
Well, yeah. I think there's still something traditional about probably watching those RTE stations and the whole build-up to that with people. And I think, for me anyway, I always watch it on that station and I always enjoy it. And I think a lot of people do. And you have other things like, the toy show where everybody makes a big night of it in and all the children in Ireland watch it. And there's a lot of programmes like that that are probably iconic in that way. And so from that point of view, I probably look and say, right, yes, there's been a huge waste of money with RTE over the years. And what do you do here? So you say, right, well, do you just let it go and not look after it? Or do you say, right, well, we have to go again here?
Right. Well, I'm not being argumentative, right? But you could have watched the All-Ireland final on BBC and also the toy show. Now, we're talking €750 million over 3 years. I would need more. I'm not asking you to mention more programming stuff. Don't get me wrong, but yeah. I'm going to take. If I'm at the cabinet table, John, you're going to have to give me something else.
Yeah, well, I can understand where you're coming from, Greg, because I do see, if you take where, if you're even in business yourself and you're stand alone and you have to make all the decisions yourself and you have to make it work and you take the commercial stations, that's exactly what they have to do. So I think if there is that fund that goes into the RTE and that goes into the stations, they also have to, look at all the commercial identities
as well. But the reason, though, we're talking now is we're talking about a decision that has been made after over a year of wrangling. So it's not really what could or should happen. It is actually they've made this call now. So after all of the controversy, the flip-flops and everything else, the bottom line is we're retaining the TV licence. the overwhelming majority of it goes to RTE, and the taxpayers paying twice for it through the licence fee and now through Exchequer funding. So do you think it's a missed opportunity, or do you think this was a good government decision?
I think it was probably a decision that they had to come to some agreement on it in the end up. And I think I do think there must be something in there for the commercial entity as well. I think there is something in there. And I think that has been agreed as well, that they will be looking to support them. And I think that's important. But I do also feel that there is a place for the RTE stations. And again, that comes down to that there has to be the governance and everything has to be a lot better in it, and really looking after how the finance is spent. And I think if that's done correctly and properly, then yeah, I do feel that that decision is the right way to go with it.
Okay, Kieran, what do you think?
Morning, Greg. Listen, I'm not happy with the package as announced yesterday. I agree with John that it was inevitable that something was going to happen and funding was the deal was going to have to be done, because RTE is practically broke. We know that for some time. But you will know from our previous conversations, Greg, that I had in mind a format which would be principally the television license going to news and current affairs, not just in RTE, but in TV3, in all independent Virgin Media and all independent radio stations around the country. And then it was my view that the other aspects of RTE programming should be split up, and drama and areas like that in particular should be covered by the commercial advertising. Remember, RTE can still take advertising with this package, I presume, over the coming years. They're not going to stop taking ads and sponsorship as well as this government top-up. So now they've got three forms of funding. In the past, you could say they had two main forms of funding. Now they have three forms of funding. I don't think it adds up. I don't think it's fair, to be honest about it. I do think RTE deserved the licence fee money for one particular reason: news and current affairs. I think its investigative reporting, Greg, has been the best in Europe.
It has, but again, I'm going to come back to the return on the money. Let's talk about the, you know, $750 million. I get where you're coming from. You know, the most recent one was relating to the FAI. There was one sometime before that as it relates to horses and nursing homes. And
nursing
I get
homes,
that, right? Yeah.
Childcare.
But we can count them on two hands. Do you know what I mean? Like, you could argue that the ditch, an online publication with just three people working in it, and I don't know them and I'm not promoting them, all right, have done more in the last year through a website in terms of actually affecting things than a €3 billion three-year RTE with all the staff and all that's in there. And I have great respect for them, Kieran, and I know you're a former colleague of those. I'm not being critical of that, but we do have to talk about the taxpayers' money and how it's being spent.
Absolutely, but you have to remember, you know, it's a state broadcaster, yet it provides an investigative news service that questions the state and does so, and has done so, Greg, I think you're being a little flippant about it. It's done so for the last 40 years. I remember, I'm old enough to remember investigations by RTE into money lending in the Republic back in the 70s. Mm. This has been going on for 40 years, this level of investigative reporting. Okay. It doesn't mean I agree with the overall funding package. In sport, for instance, I disagree fundamentally. I actually believe that instead of this charade that's going on with GA Go, that you know, the RTE and the government should have bitten the bullet on that. We should have basically said, you provide a free GA service, you pay for it from the license, not from the license fee or from the money given by the government. I do not think it's fair that people are at the moment prohibited from watching GA on the weekend because they don't have broadband, or they don't have the gadget on the phone, or they can't wire it up, or whatever it is. I think this was the chance for the government to say, listen, we're giving you the funding now. Provide the GA coverage right across the country to the 32 counties and let that be it. But no, we're still going to be left with this model whereby some people are going to sit down on a Saturday afternoon, particularly older people who are not used to the equipment, are going to be denied coverage of the games.
Okay, but
it's going to happen again next year.
You could argue that many of those games would never have been broadcast in the first place, but I do take your point, and we've had the GEA conversation. Before I bring Emma in, though, Kieran, like, you talk about the current affairs and the scrutiny, all that kind of stuff. As a listener, and I'm a radio listener primarily, believe it or not, for access to a minister on Morning Ireland every single day, that minister pretty much gets a handy ride. To the point where
I don't agree. No, I don't agree. I don't agree at all.
Really?
I think that's offensive to people like Sean O'Rourke, Rachel English, top-class broadcasters who absolutely brought ministers over the coals on RT Radio. I've heard it many, many times. You're being a bit selective, Greg. When you go back and think in history, even Charles Haughey's demise happened on RT's This Week programme, where he was absolutely interrogated about his relationship with Michael Scorpus.
I have many, no many, doubt.
There was no soft interviews when it came to the hard stuff.
Of course, but that's historic. I mean, you also remember a public slapdown.
Bertie Ahern with Brian Dobson times. You remember that one?
Yeah, but you're going back some time again. But also, we're talking about it. You heard, for instance, Pascal Donoghue's slapdown of the presenter, whereby RT had to apologise for daring to question VAT on children's shoes. And then you have the scrutiny that the likes of Mary Lou McDonald received during the week. I have not heard in recent times, Kieran, any level of government scrutiny and pressure on funding and actually having to back up what they're saying for a government minister that I heard for an opposition leader. But you don't agree with that. You think that's an unfair statement.
I left RTE just almost 4 years ago. And I remember one of the last interviews I did with a former Taoiseach, Brian Cowan, and I asked him if he was ashamed of the way the government was funding the service. And nobody in RTE said to me, you shouldn't have asked that question. Nobody said you didn't give him a hard time. But I do take your point about concerns in general about hardline questions. This is why I was not in favour of the government being the decider of financing RTE on its own every year. Because that sort of a close relationship between the broadcaster and the government is not good in my mind. I do welcome the fact this is a multi-annual agreement, so at least now they know what they've got for 3 years and what funding they have. But at the end of that 3 years, they're going to be back going begging to a government again, asking for money. And, you know, the public will quite rightly say, and will be quite rightly suspicious of the fact that, you know, they're getting soft interviews, they're getting soft, because at the end of the day, they're going with the begging ball. That's not a good relationship to be in. It's not a good way to be in. That's why I wanted this matter to be tied up. There's one other problem, Greg, with this arrangement that's been appointed, that's been announced here. That's the license fee situation. You know, the license fee is down thousands and thousands, if not millions of euros at this stage. There's a presumption here that it will come back. Now, to do that, RTE, in terms of its payments in full, RTE is going to have to restore confidence for the television license bearer. And that is going to be difficult. After the scandal of last summer, you and I spoke about it several times, the way money was used or misused. As far as I'm concerned, RTE still has to open its doors from a transparency perspective and explain many of the things that went on.
Because there's been a year of disaster and now they've got this deal, which is what they were looking for before the Ryan Tuberty payments controversy emerged. They've actually come out with really effectively the best deal, even though everything's been controversial. Emma, thank you so much for your patience. Emma McGrath, teacher and co-director of McGrath School of Speech and Drama. What's your view?
Thanks, Greg. I see where you're coming from, and I do agree that it's very hard to for RTE, I guess, to remain impartial and to show that journalistic integrity when your paymaster is the government. So therefore, you know, you definitely can see how that soft right can come through there. And I do feel, you know, sorry, maybe it might be the right word, but I do feel it for the likes of Virgin Media, who are impartial broadcasters and they report news to a very, very high quality. And they're managing to do that just as a commercial entity. Surely, you know, a business model is what's needed to be reviewed. And that, as you say, RTE going with the begging bowl year after year isn't the best use of their funds. I really had great faith in Kevin Backhurst when he came on board. I thought he's really going to shake this up and he's going to create more of a commercial opportunity here. But I guess if the money keeps flowing, why do you need to change it? You know, just keep putting another sticking plaster on the issue and you're not necessarily resolving it. I haven't said that. Previous to my teaching career, did work in media and did a lot of TV and film production. And it is a costly operation. There's no doubt about it. If you want to create good drama, high quality productions, it takes a lot of money. And RTE certainly have done that over the past couple of years. Those big Sunday night dramas that everyone tunes into for 9:30 or so, the likes of Kin and going way back before that, Love, Hate, things like that have done really well internationally. That costs a lot of money, but, you know, it can't be the only feather in their cap, really. You know, the BBC are able to do it solely just through their licensing fee and through the selling of their productions internationally, obviously on a bigger scale through BBC Worldwide. But, you know, there's definitely a business model that could be looked at, and really the opportunity was missed. And again, we're sewn up into this now for another 3 years with a lot of money going redirected towards Montrose.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. Just to give a run through, by the way, of what's on RTE 2 at the moment. Casualties on as we speak, which is a British production. The Kelly Clarkson Show follows that, which is an American show. The Drew Barrymore Show is on after that, and there's two episodes of that then. Shortland Street comes on, then Doctors, then Telly Bingo. Home and Away, How to Be Good with Money, EastEnders, before that there's Fair City, The Repair Shop, which you can watch on BBC Two, and on it goes. Young Sheldon is on then, another imported show, and on it goes. So where is the content, John? Do you know what I mean? Are we coming back to... And again, I'm talking here, and it sounds like I'm not right, but I'm talking here as a consumer. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel, if I'm listening, I find it frustrating in the mornings. I respect what Kieran is saying. But more recently, soft interviews. I you know, I know we can talk in history about some massive moments, but I would love to see all politicians get the same scrutiny Mary Lou McDonald did from Philip Boucher Hayes, because whether it was entertaining radio, whether you liked it or not, but we don't see that.
Yeah, well, I just think in reference to your, you know, the TV shows and that, I think you have to take T.G. Cahir and you take the cultural aspect of shows that are on TV there, even from, we'd say, the music, the traditional music, and where you have maybe the Grand Ole Opry and you have Daniel O'Donnell, and there's a lot of people throughout the country that enjoy those shows. And while some of those shows maybe mightn't be the greatest money makers and that, you also have to see that from the point of view of the people that are able to enjoy these shows, and it maybe is not always about money. And I think there's an element of that as well, that as a state broadcaster, and as that you show those type of shows, that they're allowed to, people can see them and have enjoy their culture with all that. And there's a lot, you know, Loughra Scale there, and there's the Irish show that is on Ross na Ruachan on TG Cahir, and there are a lot of good quality shows and documentaries as well on that. And again, it's not that they'll all make a lot of money, because they won't, and it's been having that ability to be able to show them.
And just a last question. Well, not a last question. There's no time limits on anything. But Kieran, you know, I think you referenced also people choosing not to pay the TV license. You know, were their voices heard in any of this, I wonder? In that, you know, people thought, well, I don't want to pay my money because I'm not really happy where it's going. And then the government say, or any government for that matter, say, well, if you don't want to take, we'll take your money and we'll pay anyway. And actually we'll pay more than we were previously. Does the public view not need to be? Like, I just wonder where the public opinion in all this decision is.
The public have spoken, Greg. They're not paying their licence, and a considerable amount of them are not paying their licence. And you know why? Because of the mess we became aware of last summer. Mismanagement. Now, a lot of the management RT would say are gone, but the reality is an awful lot of money was wasted and an awful lot of bad decisions were taken. There's one other big issue, I think, in yesterday's announcement. Because I haven't seen any reference so far to what's called opt-out broadcasting. And I think this is another missed opportunity. You will know, Greg, particularly, and viewers and listeners in Donegal will know that Northern Ireland, if you're watching BBC Grandstand, there's an opt-out to the BBC Northern Ireland coverage. Now, it is, believe it or not, that technology has been available here in this country for more than 20, nearly 30 years. I actually took part in a trial of that way, way back in the 90s, where RTE Northwest could come on air during the end of the 6 o'clock news, or indeed RTE Northwest could broadcast a match from Ballybuffet any Sunday on its own. It didn't have to. This is one of the issues I was annoyed about when GAA Go came along, and RTE said, we don't have the platform to show all these games. Well, you know what? They have another five platforms, or six platforms, if they looked at it. And I think this was an opportunity to do it. If viewers in the Northwest wanted to watch the county final from Donegal on a particular Sunday, if it's not on TG Cahir, obviously, if there's an opportunity to show another one, I think there should be the opt-out service. Now, it would have cost a very small amount of money. It's involved in a digital breakup of the broadcasting transmissions, but it has been used in the past. And I think it was a missed opportunity not to bring forward that now, so we had regional television and independent television from the regions as well coming forward, because I'm a little bit skeptical about how much television we're actually going to see from the regions, Greg. There's a reference to Cork and Limerick in some of the RT information that's coming out. Very little reference to the RT studios in Sligo, or indeed Athlone or Dundalk for that matter, not to mention the facilities they have in Donegal. So I'd like to see a serious effort being made to creating regional television news from Donegal and the Northwest as part of this investment.
Yeah, I mean, but like, there's one correspondent covering the area. That's pretty much in. It's quite a big area, isn't it? Emma, would you be in favour of that, more regional programming from RTE?
Absolutely. I think it would be a more inclusive model, really. And, you know, we are always feel that we are neglected or forgotten about up here. So absolutely, you know, then, you know, Highland do such a great job of presenting those local stories to us, but it would be great to see a visual alongside it. That's where people want to get the news. You know, they want quick, snappy, informative pieces, but they also want to know what's happening in their locality. But I think that would take a lot of investment of infrastructure, you know, and as you say, we're such a vast area.
I think what the BBC did, they recognised that they were very London-centric and decided to produce programming from different parts of Britain to change sort of, I presume part of it as well, was to change the mindset, you know, and a lot of the national media, John, I'm not sure if you agree or disagree, and this is not just RT, it's all of it, you know, can be quite Dublin-centric because there's a bubble there, isn't it? The journalists are there, the politicians are there, the seats of power are there. You know, it would be interesting if we looked at a model whereby, like, it's that RTE produced some of its programme from different places outside of Dublin. Maybe it might change the think.
Yeah, I agree with you on the ability to do that. It's just probably at the start now is to try and get the RTE up and running to a place where that they're able to function properly and have that money to operate. And I think I think you have a good point that if we can get round the country and get those programmes around the country, it definitely provides a lot of different information, we say, of how people live, documentaries, different things like that. But in saying that, Greg, if you take the commercial, and I go back to the commercial stations, like, while they give that money to the RT, I do feel that the commercial stations have to be helped in a way to bring them up as well, because there's no different to Highland Radio, where that you just bring great news throughout the county, and that's vital for the people in Donegal living that. So I believe that, you know, they have to invest in yourselves as well.
Yeah. Just one question on that, Kieran, from you as well, given your background. I did hear, I don't know, someone representing independent radio talking about how it was a bit of a burden that local radio stations had to have a 22 or 20% output of current affairs, and that's not sustainable. I hope they're not looking to water that down in any way, shape or form, because I think it is actually pivotal, and it would be local radio shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, you have to try and make that work for your station to work. I mean, there has to be it has to make commercial sense for something to be on air as well, be it RTE, Virgin Media or Highland Radio. I'm not a big fan of all current affairs being funded because we really need them. You know, you need to be doing it right and to be self-sustaining as much as you can be, I think.
No, I agree. I agree with Greg, and totally. I would be absolutely against any watering down of the service whereby we saw less than that 22%. In fact, I am actually disappointed in recent years that the broadcasting authorities have allowed some local stations to team up quite a lot. An example of that would be one down my neck of the woods, Shannonside Northern Sound, who share a lot of programmes. And sometimes I wonder whether it's local radio or not anymore, because if you're listening on South Roscommon, to a program presented from Castle Blaney, I'm not quite sure if that's local radio anymore. So I'd be totally against any dilution of the service. Local radio should have their 20% plus, and we should fund it. At the end of the day, the service you guys provided for the local elections, European elections, was outstanding. I heard it on Shannonside and Northern Sound and all the other stations as well. Top class. It's public service broadcasting, and I think there should be a place within the license fee. I haven't looked at the nitty-gritty. I've been out here in Europe for the last 10 days. I've missed the breakdown.
I think this is around 20
if
to 25.
The radio is going to get anything from
I think there's about 20 or 25 million. I don't know the figure myself, whereby it can be drawn down for specialised programming and stuff. You know, there's a pot there, but there has to be output for that or something along those lines. It's not something that I focus too heavily on, but there we are. Okay, listen, thank you very much for that so far. That's interesting stuff. John McNulty, Emma McGrath, Kieran Mullooly. I feel like I'm pronouncing your surname wrong.
You got it spot on this time, Greg. Spot on.
This time. Bit of a slight there, is it? All right, thanks so much for that. Let me see, just a couple of comments coming in here so far. We should not have to pay a licence as well as hand over our taxes to fund RTE, believes a listener. RTE questioning the state, a joke, right? Maybe 40 years ago, but not anymore. Irish journalists and media are seriously lacking today when we know all that's going on in Ireland, never mind the world. They're just following entertainment and fluff pieces for the dumbed-down RTE's viewer and letting the serious issues go unreported, unchallenged, even though people are trying their best to expose one scandal after another. Most should hang their heads in shame. I think I don't know exactly what that listener's referring to, but there's a big difference between publishing something on the internet or publishing something on your social media or reading a claim, and also how we or RT or any media organisation could actually go around reporting that because of the checking and fact checking and balance and all that kind of stuff that you have to apply to it. John McNulty, we got the runners and riders for Fianna Fáil selection convention. A lot of speculation that you could be running for Fine Gael. What's the story there? Is that something you want to do? Is it something you would be open to?
It's probably something that I would be open to, Greg. I met with the Taoiseach Simon Harris last Friday at McGill Summer School. Had a cup of tea with him and we had a chat and we had a good conversation on things. So for the minute, I think the conventions are the end of August, so it's something that maybe is on my mind at the moment.
Will your name be in the hat?
It's possible. It's possible, all right. There may be a few things yet to iron out, but it's possible.
Well, without obviously, if it's your personal life or anything like that, I'm not asking.
Yeah.
But is there anything public, like, in relation to that? Is it, like, the way the party moves forward, what the strategy might be, or is it only stuff that you have to figure out for yourself?
It's probably stuff I have to figure out myself first.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, at the moment.
Do we know if it's going to be a one candidate strategy or two, or...?
Well... I mean, past history has been two, so I'd imagine it will be two this time as well. I would think that's because Donegal is a big county, so I'd expect it to be two.
And there is there's a lot of Fine Gael voters out there, a lot of Fine Gael voters in and around where you're based. You would feel that you could tap into them significantly, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's about having them. There's also, you have to look at it as the overall thing for Donegal. It's not just Fine Gael voters. You're looking to appeal to the majority of Donegal people, that you can give them something to believe in if you did go forward. And I think you have to think of all those things when you're thinking about it.
A lot of people not happy with the setup you aligned yourself with in Europe, Kieran, that they thought you were maybe a little bit more maybe right-leaning in your views, and you found yourself snuggling up to a more left-leaning grouping. It's proved quite controversial.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad about the opportunity to talk about it this morning, give you a full rundown of how it developed.
Well, let's not get Greg, too full.
I suppose in the first instance, I went to the election before the voters as an independent Ireland candidate. By the way, good luck to John. Anybody who puts their name in front of the electorate is high in my estimation, and good luck to him on that. But I went as an independent candidate, and then I went to successful thanks to the voters of Donegal and the Northwest. I went to Brussels. And, I suppose maybe I was a bit naive, but when I got there, I was very disappointed by the attitude of the main groupings when I started to try and get in there among the committees and align myself. For instance, and this is something maybe John will bear in mind when he meets his party leader and others down the road. When I spoke to all parties, all groupings, I spoke to almost all groupings in Brussels. I think I ruled out the ECR, the far right group. But the group I did speak to, one of the early groups I spoke to was the EPP, which is the Fine Gael party largely. And I was dismissed out of hand immediately. In fact, Sean Kelly, the Southern MEP, is quoted as describing me as a freelander, a freewheeling independent who EPP would not speak to and would not consider having on their grouping. So, I hope the voters of Donegal bear that in mind when independents come their way in the future. There was quite a dismissive attitude towards independents out there. But yet, the longer I went on in the negotiations, Greg, the more I realised that if I was unattached in the European Parliament, I would not get on any committees. As it was, I struggled to get on two or three committees. But being unattached, you would be out in the cold entirely. What does that mean? That means you'd have no say on critical issues. You know, no vote at committees and critical issues. And you risk the chance of being left irrelevant, I suppose, for a five-year period. Now, some people might say you can go up and down the corridors of Brussels making speeches and doing great social media posts, but that's not my style. I want to achieve something in Brussels. So I searched for a party that did have commonalities, what I was looking for. And I found the European Democratic Party to be very, very similar. For instance, Christine Singer, their MEP, is in the farming sector like myself, somebody who's looking very carefully at the common agricultural policy changes, wants to see a budget increase, wants to see new funding for environmental schemes for farmers. So I sat down with the EDP and eventually we aligned ourselves to them. And they have 10 MEPs here in Europe, 10 MEPs as compared to Fianna Fáil's 4 MEPs. Yet they all sit together in the Renew grouping, which is where I sit at the moment. I have to say what went on, Greg, after that for a 3-week period was akin to the Ballinasloe horse fair by five. The horse trading in terms of getting on committees was one of the most difficult parts of the job for me.
But did you sell out for the electorate, even if it means maybe those that voted for you, if they had have known which way you might go, might have said, well, you know, I'd prefer to vote for someone, even if they're just walking up and down the corridors of power and making TikToks, that they wouldn't align themselves with a grouping who are very much in certain areas against my way of thinking?
Well, I know what you're saying, but I sent out almost a million flyers to the homes of the country in the Northwest. And on it, I pointed out that I was a worker. I gave examples of the three projects I had achieved. I mean, capital projects put in place. I was never going to go to Brussels to make speeches. But I have to say that I am disappointed I didn't get on the Fisheries Committee, with the PESH Committee that I did target. And I did speak about when I met you last in Killybegs and County Donegal. But the simple reality for me was when I went into the General Secretary of the Renew Group and started to put up my shopping list on the first day, I was told you will be on no committees and you'll be on no subcommittees. You're a newcomer, you're green, you're independent, and green as in if you think you're going to walk onto committees. So I had to get in the back of the queue, so to speak. I did manage in the end to get on as a sub on the Agriculture Committee, for which I'm happy with. But I also on the REGI Committee, which is Regional Affairs, which we'll be dealing with cohesion funds, and we're dealing with the Just Transition Fund. And I have to tell you this morning, I have also arranged that I will be able to monitor the PESH committee, and I will be able to work, or at least I hope to be able to work with the committee member, the subcommittee member, which is Luke Flanagan from County Roscommon as well. So okay. It certainly was an eye-opener for me, but I will say one thing about this whole process. You know, people should be very clear about it. When you get to Brussels, there are four or five main groupings. At the moment, Fine Gael's grouping, EPP, are running the show, Greg. They have chairs and vice chairs, the vast majority of the committees. And I, for one, find it disappointing that they will not allow independents who represent up to 70,000 people in the Midlands Northwest an opportunity to sit on some of those committees.
Yeah, OK. I don't know who sends out the press releases for Independent Ireland, but my word, I got a book through on email. I'm not reading all that. But anyway, obviously someone who's very interested in that kind of thing. Right, OK. We're going to take our last break before the top of the hour, so to speak, and it means then we can move on to our next issue. And we're going to start with Emma, and it is Sinn Féin's immigration policy document published this week. It's received significant scrutiny and we'll be very interested in the listeners and our panel's views on that after, as I say, we take this break. We'll be right back. Sinn Féin's immigration policy document was published this week and has received significant scrutiny. Mary Lou McDonald has said that more international protection centres should be located in better-off areas under its new immigration policy. The party is calling for a local audit of resources to be carried out before new locations are chosen. This would examine criteria including GP lists and school places, proximity to transport and existing levels of disadvantage. So really, Emma, I'll ask you first, Emma McGrath, does this really set the bar too high for any IPASS centres anywhere, or do you think this is a welcome proposal?
I absolutely do agree with it in principle. However, I think it's just great rhetoric at the end of the day. You know, where in Ireland are you going to find a GP surgery that has got empty spaces? You know, everyone's queuing to get in, regardless whether you have relocated from a different county or from a different country. Regarding school places, you know, the most schools already, we have our teachers student ratio is the highest in Europe. We, on a paper, it should be 23 to 1 in Ireland, but in reality, it's much higher than that. That's just not available. The school places are just not readily available unless you go to maybe the rural areas and the more remote settings. And at the end of the day, they are the places that have the maybe empty properties, such as the old hotels, the large properties that are available to the government to use for international protection candidates to use. And, you know, if there's large urban areas that are very well serviced with commuter links or with transport and facilities on the doorstep, they're not going to have the large empty vacant properties, because otherwise they're going to be snapped up by property developers. So it's a catch 22, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, Crown Paints, there was lots of proposals to do other things with that. They couldn't get it over the line, I think, in terms of planning. But then obviously they were able to do progress with this IPASS plans, because we're talking here about large centres here. But where, as you say, Emma, where do they go? If it's, you know, but like, is this really is this set the bar so high that there aren't any IPASS centres, or I don't know what the solution is there?
I think it's just going to revert back to the way it has been over the past couple of years, because I believe that the you know, they called out that there was a cry for anyone with any vacant properties, please let us know, contact the department. And it became a, I guess, a box ticking exercise. There's a large property available in West Donegal or North Donegal, wherever it may be. But there are initiatives and there are things that have followed afterwards, maybe not in the right order, but it has happened. You know, transport links have been modified, transport connections have been introduced to help connect people that are located in rural areas of Donegal to make them, you know, more accessible to the larger urban areas. I can't speak for the GP situation in Donegal, but I do know my own brother-in-law is a health liaison officer and works with IPASS candidates or IPASS clients in the west of the country, and they have came up with a unique or a novel way to help solve the GP situation, where a semi-retired GP has came on to host a sessional clinic in the West Dock facilities, and they do that 3 days a week. So it's not a dedicated GP facility for the IPASS people, but it's also it's an opportunity for them to access healthcare, and then they are scheduled and given appointments because they just cannot be taken on as patients in the local community because GP surgeries are at capacity with the local residents that are already on their books. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are initiatives and there are ways, I suppose, to support IPASS people when they do arrive and to offer them, I suppose, the access to the education, the access to the healthcare, although maybe just not in the right format. Ideally, it should come first, but I mean, time is of the essence and of many of these situations also. And I guess it's maybe the cart before the horse, but it's not ideal, but there are ways around it.
John, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I think I like that idea there, or that they came up with Emma's talking about there. I think that's great. And I think a lot of
communities and villages in Donegal would love that too.
Yeah, you're right. And it's something that you could look at and possibly roll out with whether there's other retired GPs that may be willing to take that on. But I do know that, I mean, all the different departments were in Donegal and last month in June. And I think they're continuously trying to make things better for how we do things with IPASS and how we deal with these, you know, the people coming into the country. Because it's probably quite a new phenomenon to Ireland, because for, you know, we're probably, what, over 100 years old. And really, for a large part of that, we've just been immigrating ourselves. So for us, for migration, and migration maybe of that level, is unprecedented and is something that we're just getting very new to.
I think, though, that maybe to some extent Sinn Féin have missed the point here, in that it's not really where people seeking international protection go, it's how many of them there are. You know, 1 month this year alone, we had the highest rate of asylum seekers arriving into this country, far above the European average. So, you know, I understand that we need parties need a plan as to how you deal with that influx of people. But really, I think what the public are concerned about this point is the amount of people coming in, even perhaps a little bit more so than what happens to them after that, because it's little. It's like whack-a-mole, isn't it? You know, it's Longford one day, it's Crown Paints the other, it'll be Dublin, then it'll be here. You know what I mean? So yeah, that rumbles on and rumbles on. But the core issue here is that the majority of people I would speak to on and off air believe that, you know, we're there's far too many people coming into this country. I don't know if you think maybe the government and the opposition are missing the principal concern here.
Well, I think they're probably looking at it, and they have to really get a grip. Again, when something new like that happens, it takes probably a little while to get the action into place, and really that's getting the numbers, we'd say, of the Gardaí and different things like that in place, and in terms of looking after what's coming into the country, how are they coming into the country, if it's legal that they're coming into the country, and that the documents and everything is correct. And we've got to really buckle down on that and really nail down on that whatever people are coming into the country, they're coming in legitimately and it's all legal, then that's fair enough. We look after them and we see what we can do there. But if there's illegal people and there's different things like that, well, we've got to deal with that, because every country's got to deal with that. Because,
but do you think locals should have a veto on where an IPASS centre is?
That's a very difficult one. You know, I mean, I see that the department, as I said, were in Donegal in June, and they're constantly reviewing all those things anyway. So they already have an idea of what's happening. So I think what Sinn Féin are saying there, a lot of it's happening already, and I think they're just trying. It's probably in trial and error over this last.
But say,
two
for
years.
Instance, there was an old factory in Ardra. There was plans to convert that into an IPASS centre with, you know, 300 or 400 primarily men in it, would you oppose that, or would you be in the community saying, look, this is good for us?
I think, again, you probably have to look at the populations and areas of communities and see what that situation is. And I mean, you really have to look at that, and the communication has to be very clear with that, with the community, with the councillors, with all the people on the ground. And for me, I wouldn't be able just to answer straight that out. There's a lot of things have to go into something like that to make that happen. And
you're not automatically opposed to it either.
Well, what I'm saying there probably is that, you know, again, depending on the size of the community, I mean, 300 to 400 going into our dry, I would think would be far too many.
So where, the Donegal town?
Well, that's the question,
well,
isn't it?
It's much bigger.
Well, it's much bigger. But again, it's a question of trying to find what is right. So again,
well, what about the big shop that's been derelict for 10 years in Ballybofey, Stranraer? Would that be okay?
I think it's all relative to the amount of people. I do feel if you take big towns and we say...
I don't think I'm going to find anywhere where it would be okay, though. You see, that's the point.
The point that I'm going to make today, and like if you look at the numbers, I think numbers is probably a big thing, and you probably have to look at, and they have smaller numbers.
Yeah, but
the
plan, your party, you're a member of Fine Gael, your party's plan is to have, and your government's plan is to have these big places, so we can't ride two horses here. That's the plan. So if you're running for election for Fine Gael, if you were selected, you have to back that plan, you know? That's the...
Well, I think you could also, you have to give your view on that plan. And I mean, that plan can change, and it's up to the people within the party to make that plan change and to suit the narrative of what's happening in Donegal. And I would have to reflect the views of the people of Donegal on that.
Okay, Kieran, what's your view?
Well, I haven't read all the Sinn Féin document, Greg, but what I did read
were three or four sections of this, which were
very similar to what I read in the Independent Ireland policy, which we unveiled last year. For instance, I see now that they've decided that we're not going to support hoteliers and make millionaires around the country. That's been an Independent Ireland policy for months. We're sick of watching vast amounts of money being poured into private interests around the country so they can get richer and richer. Our attitude in Independent Ireland has been, first and foremost, we must get our act together at the ports, at the airports, and at the procedure people are coming in. As Jana said, if people are...
They're coming across the border. The majority is coming across the border. How do you get that in order?
Well, I believe, actually, after the changes in the UK in recent times in terms of government, Greg, that won't be the case in the next month or two.
I think that's going to change dramatically.
I think the absence of the Rwanda situation is going to change the whole movement situation across the Irish Sea, and I think that is going to change. But we have to have people at our ports and airports who have enough staff, have enough time available, have enough resources.
But what would they do
to be
the
able
airport?
To make decisions to within 90 days? That's the big issue.
So where would you put people in the interim?
90 days.
So you'd keep them at the airport or the ports for 90 days?
Well, they've got to be, at the moment, they just disappear into the countryside. I mean, that's unfortunately the situation is at the moment. They're going into some centres, then they're going, a lot of them, we don't know where they are at all in the country. I mean, I want to talk about where they should be going. If it is a case that asylum seekers have successfully applied for asylum here, we're back to consultation. And this is the critical thing. You know, Greg, I told you before, I worked with a group of people in County Roscommon where we brought in over 300 people from Ukraine. In that situation, we looked around the county to see if there was a building, which was available. We found a building we thought was good, an old Dunamon Castle, it was called. It was a derelict Irish Wheelchair Association building. We sat down with the local people. We sat down with the authorities in Roscommon, the county manager. We looked at the building itself, what was possible. And today, 70 people still live there with the support of the local people, with the cooperation of the local people. But our government has had a problem with consultation. That seems to be the big issue.
Yeah.
They're afraid to come and meet local communities.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, you know, and I mean, your example is slightly different from an IPAS centre. The bottom line is consultation leads to opposition, which leads to effectively allowing locals a veto, which is a problem for a lot of parties. But unfortunately, we have to leave it. Kieran Mullooly, MEP for Midlands North West, thank you for your time. Have a great day.
Greg, can I just say one quick word?
Briefly,
thank you to the one and only Pádraig Gallen in Letterkenny, who was my election agent up there. He's listening carefully to Highland Radio this morning. Hi to Paul, to Pádraig and Magella and the family. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. Emma McGrath, teacher and co-director of McGrath School of Speech and Drama. Great to have you back on the show, Emma.
Thank you, Greg. Have a lovely weekend.
Have a goodie.
Everyone.
Take care of yourself. And last but not least, in studio with me here, John McNulty, Donegal County Ladies Manager and business person, of course, and potential Fine Gael election candidate. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Greg.
All right, it's been great having you in. We'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after we take a break for the news and obituary notices.